Our sermon passage today is found in the book of James. I will be reading James chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. So if you would turn there and follow along with me as I read James 5, 1 through 6. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasure in the last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on the earth in luxury and in self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you.
Thank you, Amy. Well, this morning we are continuing our sermon series in the book of James, and we come to chapter 5, and so have one more chapter left in this book that we've been walking through together for some months. And as we come to chapter 5, we probably come to some of the harshest words, straightforward words in all of the book of James. Like, this has been a hard book all along. James doesn't hold back at all throughout this entire letter. And then in chapter 5, it seems like he increases the intensity just a little bit as we come to everyone's favorite topic, money. Now, I know when some of you hear that, you're thinking, I'm a poor college student. I don't have any money. This sermon's going to be completely irrelevant for me. Others of you, you hear that this topic is about money, and you're thinking, okay, I've been in church long enough and to enough churches before. Like, I've seen this before. This is the guilt trip sermon. The pastor gets up, makes everybody feel guilty that they're not giving enough to be able to give more to the church. I've seen this before. Yeah. Others of you might be thinking, money, great. Like, for all of my life, money has been nothing but stress and hurt and pain and conflict. And the last thing you want to do is sit here for however many minutes and listen to a sermon on money. And so in hearing all these different maybe potential responses that are out there this morning when it comes to this particular topic of money, let me first say, I get it. Like, I've been in each of those groups at one point in my life. So I understand where you're coming from if you're thinking about any of those different responses here this morning. At the same time, though, this topic of money is really, really, really important. Like, did you know that there are over 2,300 verses in the Bible about money? Like, that's a whole lot of verses about money. And so for some reason, the creator God of the universe thought this was an important topic, that he talks about it over 2,300 times in this book. And not only that, one time when he talks about it, he says that money is a window into our hearts, that money exposes and reveals what we truly treasure and what we truly love and worship in our hearts. Jesus talked about this, right? In Matthew 6, 21, he said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. But one of the most important reasons for why this topic of money is so important is because in the majority of those 2,300 verses in the Bible, those verses tell us that if we're not careful, money can be really, really, really dangerous. That's why Jesus says that it's hard for a rich person to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Like, think about that. It's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle, which is impossible, than for a rich person to enter into the kingdom of heaven. In other words, it's hard. It's humanly impossible for a rich person to go to heaven. It's humanly impossible. It's hard. Now, I know when some of you hear that, you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm glad I'm not rich then. I'm glad Jesus' words here don't apply to me. Well, the reality is this. Compared to the rest of the world, you're rich. And especially compared to those that James is writing to in this letter and compared to those in James's day, you're rich. And so then, when Jesus says that it's hard for a rich person to enter in the kingdom of heaven, he's talking about you. He's talking about me. He's talking about people just like us. People who own homes, who own cars, who have a TV, who have a smartphone, and on and on and on and on. That it's hard, it's really, really hard for people like us to enter into the kingdom of heaven. It's not an easy thing for wealthy people like us to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Which then begs the question, well, why? Why is it so hard for rich people to enter into the kingdom of heaven? Well, Paul tells us in 1 Timothy, don't turn there, but in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 through 10, he says this. He says, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmless desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. And so that right there, that's why it's hard for people who have a whole lot of stuff, who have a whole lot of possessions, to enter into God's kingdom. It's because if we're not careful, we can begin to grow so attached to our stuff and become so in love with our stuff and that we completely lose sight of things that are eternal and things that where our true treasure really lies, and instead we can make our treasure all the money and all the possessions in the world and all the stuff that we have. And that's the danger. And those are the warnings that we're going to see within our passage here this morning. Remember the context real quick, right, of James. Remember who James is writing to. He's writing to Jewish Christians who are being exploited and oppressed by rich, wealthy landowners. And so in this passage then, what James is going to do is that he's going to address those rich, wealthy landowners now. He's going to address those rich, wealthy landowners that are oppressing and exploiting these poor Jewish Christians that he's been writing to. And he's going to address them and he's going to condemn them to hell. He's going to condemn them to judgment. But hear this, please. The reason he condemns them to judgment isn't because they're rich. Do you catch that? He doesn't condemn them to judgment because they're rich. Instead, the reason he condemns them to judgment is because of how they are using their riches. It's because of how they relate to their riches. And this is a really, really important point to understand as we come to this passage this morning. That at the very first verse of chapter 5, James is going to address and condemn the rich in this passage. And when he does that, he's not condemning rich people, all rich people, like without exception. Meaning if your income is above this level, then you're automatically going to hell. That's not what James is saying in this passage. Instead, what James is doing in this passage, he's addressing and he's condemning a specific type or a specific kind of rich person. Namely, those who use their riches and relate to their riches in a certain way. And we're going to see what that way is in our passage here this morning. It's in this way, then, that this passage, then, is relevant for every single one of us here this morning, no matter what your bank account is. Because in this passage, what we're going to do is we're going to be warned. We're going to see all these warnings of how not to relate to our possessions, of how not to relate to our money, how not to relate to the temptations of wealth and riches that are all around us, and to be warned to not follow in the footsteps of these rich, wealthy landowners that James is addressing in this passage here this morning. Because if we do, if we follow their example and relate to wealth, relate to possessions and money just like they did, then we're going to incur the same judgment that they did. So that's what we're going to see in this passage this morning. James, he's going to give us three specific warnings regarding wealth and regarding possessions and how not to relate to money and possessions. And my hope as we see these warnings that they would put us on high alert and cause us to be serious and be on high alert when it comes to how we relate to our own money and possessions, and in particular, how we relate to the temptation to get sucked into the materialistic culture in which we live today. And that this passage would remind us that we have a greater treasure than any treasure that this world has to offer us. And so that's what we're going to see, these three warnings regarding money and possessions. And the first warning is this, and you see it on your handout there, that James gives us. It's to beware of hoarding wealth. It's the first warning, to beware of hoarding wealth. We see this warning right from the get-go in verses 1 through 3 here in chapter 5. Look at verse 1 with me. James begins this way. He says, "Come now, you rich." And again, not he's specifically referring to these rich, wealthy landowners and how they're misusing their wealth. And we'll see how they're misusing it in the verses to come. And he tells them, "Weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you." You might want to underline or circle those two words there, weep and howl. Those words there are used often in the Old Testament by Old Testament prophets that are when they warn the wicked for the judgment that is about to come upon them. Judgment is about to come upon these wicked people in the Old Testament. And James tells them because of this judgment that's about to come that they need to weep and howl because of this judgment that is about to come upon them. And James here is saying that the rich that he's addressing in this passage need to respond in this exact same way. They need to weep, they need to howl because of the miseries that are going to come upon them. And the miseries is this eternal judgment, this judgment that is going to come when Jesus returns, that's going to come upon them. Which then begs this question, and I've kind of already alluded to it in my introduction, but why? Why are these miseries, why is this judgment going to come upon these rich people? Well, we see the reason in the very next verse, in verse 2, and then also in verse 3. Look there with me at verse 2. James says, "Your riches have rotted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasure in the last days." So then this is the reason, right, why these miseries, why this judgment is going to come upon the rich that James is writing to. It's because, he tells us at the end of verse 3, because they've laid up treasure in the last days. Those two words, their last days, are used all throughout the Bible, especially the New Testament, in reference to the time period between Jesus' resurrection and Jesus' return. Those are the last days, meaning we're in the last days right now. And during the last days, James says that these rich people that he's addressing have laid up treasure for themselves. And those three words here, laid up treasure, it's one word in the Greek, and it literally means to accumulate and gather stuff. To accumulate, to gather, to store up, to hoard money and possessions and all your stuff for yourself. And that's what these rich people have done. They've bought and bought and bought and accumulated and accumulated and accumulated and stored up just a whole bunch of stuff for themselves. But James here within this passage reminds them that all this stuff that they've accumulated, he reminds them that it's not going to last. That's why in verse 2 and then also in verse 3, he says that their riches, did you notice the language he uses here? Their riches have rotted. Their garments have been eaten by moths. Their gold and their silver have corroded. His whole point in saying all this is to show how all these possessions that they've been accumulating, those possessions are fleeting. They're deteriorating. They're not going to last. But he's saying even more than that. It's not just that all the stuff that they've accumulated is fleeting and isn't going to last. He says that all the stuff that they've accumulated, catch this, serves as evidence against them. It's exhibit A against them. Meaning, it exposes and reveals the reality of their hearts and what they truly treasure. That all the stuff that they've bought, all the stuff they've hoarded and accumulated and stored up, reveals that they don't truly treasure God. They truly don't treasure God's kingdom. They truly don't treasure Jesus. They truly don't treasure the things of the Lord. Instead, they treasure money. They treasure their possessions. They treasure all their trinkets and toys and gadgets that they bought and stored up and accumulated. And because of that, then look what James says is going to happen to them as a result. We see in the middle of verse 3 there. Their flesh is going to be eaten like fire. Now, I don't know exactly what all that means, but it's not good. Specifically a reference to the miseries going back to verse 1 in chapter 5. And within the rest of the context of chapter 5, it's a reference to the judgment that's going to come when Jesus returns. And so, like, this is the warning, right? For those of us who live in a materialistic culture, for those of us who live in Johnson County, this is the warning for every single one of us. Don't get sucked into materialism. Don't get sucked into just buying and buying and buying and accumulating, gathering, storing up more and more treasure here on this earth. Which then begs this question. All right, where's the line? Where's the line? Just give me the line. Like, how much is too much then? Like, where do I go from I'm okay buying and having this to just hoarding, laying up treasure on earth? Like, where's the line? How much is too much? Well, James doesn't tell us. And the reason he doesn't tell us is because guess what? There's not a line. There's not a number. And the reason there's not a line and there's not a number is because ultimately what's important isn't how much you have. What's ultimately important is your heart for why you have it. And your heart postured toward what you have. And your heart postured toward all the stuff that you've accumulated. That's what's ultimately important. And so then instead of giving you a line or a number of saying, this is too much, don't go over this, here are some questions. Just some practical questions to consider to help you evaluate just your own heart toward money and possessions in your own life. And these questions can help you discern and to evaluate in your own heart where that line is and if it's too much. And so then one question would be, does your money and possessions feed your ego and pride? In other words, do they make you feel more important? Do they make you feel more valuable? Do they make you feel more significant as a person? Number two, do they, your money, possessions, make you feel less dependent on God and less reliant on God? Does it cause you to find your security and your trust in the stuff you have rather than in Him? Third, do all your possessions and money cause you to set your mind and your heart on the things of this earth and to be fixated on the things of this world that won't last instead of on things that are eternal? There's a whole lot of other questions that could be asked, but that's a starting point. Again, there's not a line, there's not a number. What ultimately matters is your heart. Why do you have it? And what's your heart posture toward what you have? Which then leads to question, warning number two that James gives us regarding money and possessions. And the second warning he gives is this. He warns us about defrauding others, about defrauding or cheating, tricking others. So what we see next in verse 4, and then we also see it again in verse 6. So look there with me at verse 4. James says, behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. So again, we've talked about this before. I mentioned this in my introduction, but what's going on here is these rich, wealthy landowners here would hire laborers, people to come and work in their fields and mow their fields, but they wouldn't pay them. Or if they did pay them, they'd pay them just pennies. And they wouldn't pay them what they agreed to pay them or what a fair wage was. The problem with that is in that day, most laborers in that day were day laborers, meaning they worked for a day and they got paid for that day's labor. And so they literally lived just day by day. What they got paid is what they used to eat on and all that stuff. So they didn't get paid. They didn't eat for that day. And if they didn't get paid the next day, then they didn't get eaten, on and on and on. And so they were dependent upon the pay. But these rich, wealthy landowners were defrauding them. They were cheating them. They were holding back the pay that they had promised them, the pay that they deserved. And because they weren't getting paid, and then they weren't getting paid day after day after day after day after day, then they couldn't survive. Which is probably what James is getting to in verse 6 when he says that the rich have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you. There's debate among scholars in regards to whether or not these rich, wealthy landowners have literally murdered the righteous laborers who worked for them. But in all likelihood, they murdered them by not paying them and causing them to starve to death. And as a result of that, do you see what James says? In verse 6 at the very end, he says that these righteous laborers then were not resisting the rich, wealthy landowners who were defrauding them. They were not opposing the rich, wealthy landowners that were defrauding them, meaning they weren't defending themselves, which is kind of weird, right? Kind of begs the question, well, why? Why weren't they defending themselves against these rich, wealthy landowners that were defrauding them? You know what the answer is? They couldn't. They couldn't. Like in that day, if they would have gone to court with these rich, wealthy landowners, these poor little laborers would have lost every single time. Because in that day, the way what mattered in court wasn't justice. What mattered in court was status and how much money somebody had, how much power and influence somebody had. And because of that, then these poor Jewish Christian laborers didn't have any recourse. They didn't have any way to defend themselves. These rich, wealthy landowners could cheat them and cheat them and cheat them and cheat them, and they could do nothing about it. No one had their back. No one could defend them except for one person. You know who that one person was? God. God. It's the point James is making at the very end of verse 4 when he says that the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. That title there, Lord of hosts, probably sounds familiar. It's all over the Old Testament, right? And it's to depict, that title depicts God. It could literally be translated as the Lord of armies. And it depicts God as a mighty warrior, like we sang about, right? Who is leading this huge army to come and wage war against those who are oppressing his people. And that's the picture that James is painting here. That nobody else in that day might hear the cries of the laborers who are being defrauded by these rich, wealthy landowners. The justice system doesn't hear it. The judges don't hear it. The police don't hear it. Nobody hears their cries except for the Lord of hosts, the Lord of armies. And since he hears their cry, he's going to defend them. He's going to come and make sure he's got their back. He's going to come and make sure that justice is done against those who are defrauding them and treating them unjustly. And this is the warning for us here this morning. It's pretty simple. Don't follow the example of these rich, wealthy landowners and cheat other people and defraud other people and trick other people so you can hold on to your money or so that you can make some money off of them. In other words, like if you're an employer who has people working for you, think about it. Are you paying them a fair wage? A fair wage for the work that they're doing? Are you in any way withholding money from them that they deserve? Are you in any way cheating those who work for you so you can hold back and make more money for yourself? Have you cheated someone out of an agreed upon wage that you made with them? Or just think about your job. You don't have to be an employer. Just think about if you're an employee at a job and who you work for. Are you in a job in which you feel pressure to cheat, to trick other people, to cheat, to defraud a customer, to trick a client in order to make some more money? Or think just beyond employers, think beyond employees, think about the money and possessions you have yourself right now. Is there anything that you've acquired by unjust means? Is there anything you've acquired for yourself through defrauding other people, through cheating other people, through tricking other people in order to get it? Like, this is what the rich, wealthy landowners were doing to those that James is writing to, and this is what he's warning against and coming down hard against. It might not look as ugly as what these rich, wealthy landowners were doing. Oh, man. But it's still prevalent, and it's tricky, and it can be really subtle in our hearts. That's warning number two. Warning number three that he gives then is this. It's to beware of living in self-indulgence. Beware of living in self-indulgence. This point warning James makes there in verse 5. Look there with me at verse 5. He says, you have lived on the earth in luxury and in self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. Do you see the picture there that James is painting there? It's the picture of cows. It's the day of slaughter for these cows. They're about to be slaughtered. And on that day that they're about to be slaughtered, these cows are just out in the field, just eating, just gorging themselves, indulging themselves. They're about to be butchered. Their lives are about to come to an end. It's the day of slaughter. And they're completely oblivious to what's about to happen to them. And so they're out in the field just feeding away, just gorging themselves. And James here is saying that this is what these rich, wealthy landowners are doing. They're completely oblivious to the day of slaughter, the day of judgment, when Jesus returns. They're not even on their radar at all. And so they're just buying, accumulating a bunch of stuff, storing a bunch of stuff, just indulging themselves with more and more money. Just indulging themselves, fattening themselves with more and more possessions. But it's even more than that. Instead, they're selfishly indulging themselves with more and more stuff at the expense of those who are in desperate need all around them, like we saw in verse 4 and in verse 6. That they're fattening themselves, gorging themselves with more and more stuff, while those who work their fields are starving. Like, instead of helping them, hey, here, I'll spare some stuff. I'll share some stuff with you. I'll share some of my money with you. Instead, they're keeping it to themselves and just gorging themselves with it. While those poor field laborers are starving to death. And this is the warning. Like, it's not wrong to have things. It's not wrong to accumulate money. It's not wrong to accumulate possessions for yourself. But it is wrong to selfishly indulge yourself and gorge yourself and have little to no concerns for poor and needy people who have nothing. It is wrong to selfishly indulge yourself with more and more possessions and not share any of it with people who are in desperate need around you. That's what's wrong. And so then ask yourself, like, seriously, is this me? Is this me? Like, am I concerned with the needs of those around me? Or am I too busy just gorging myself with money and possessions? Am I generous? Do I share my stuff? Do I share my money? Do I share my possessions with those in need around me? Or I just keep it myself and indulge myself with it? So those are three warnings, right, that James gives us in this passage. These warnings, they're specifically, yes, for these rich, wealthy landowners, but not just for them, and they're for us too. Should cause us to look at how we relate to, how we respond to, how we use our money and possessions as well. And so then, in light of these warnings then, okay, we've seen these warnings. In light of these warnings then, okay, what should we do? How should we respond? How should we respond to these three warnings that James gives us about money and possessions in this chapter? Well, this is how I want us to conclude, and this will be our landing point and how I want us to close our time here this morning. Here are two practical ways to respond to these warnings that we've just seen in this passage. And the first way is this. And these warnings are really for two groups of people. So first, If you're here this morning, and if your life resembles these wealthy landowners in this passage, I mean, if this is a mirror into your life, into your heart, meaning if money is your God, if possessions, material possessions, are your ultimate treasure, if that's what you ultimately love and worship more than anything else, if that's you this morning, then hear this warning that we've seen resounding over and over and over again in this passage. Judgment is coming. You need to weep and howl for the miseries that are going to come upon you. The day of slaughter for you is coming. Like, we're not playing games. This isn't just a made-up story to scare you to death. Like, this is real. Jesus came the first time. He's coming the second time in judgment. And since that's true, then here's how you need to respond. If this is you this morning, see it on your head. You need to turn from your love of money, your worship of money, and you need to trust in Jesus to save you from the judgment that you deserve for your sin. In other words, there's good news. There's good news here. Like, we've seen judgment all throughout this passage, but there's a way of escape. There's a way of salvation from this judgment that you deserve. And that way of escape is Jesus. It's that Jesus came to die in your place as your substitute. In other words, when he died on the cross, he took all the judgment that James describes in this chapter on himself in your place. Or to put it more specifically, instead of you being slaughtered on the day of judgment, he was slaughtered on the cross in your place. Instead of your flesh being eaten by fire, his flesh was eaten by fire on the cross in your place. Instead of you weeping and howling for the miseries that are coming upon you, those miseries were put on Jesus on the cross in your place. There's a way of escape. There's a way to be rescued from the judgment that's described in this chapter. And that way of escape is Jesus. But in order for this to be true of you, you have to turn from your love and your worship of money. And you have to turn to Jesus and trust in Jesus as your one and only hope to be rescued and to save from the judgment that you deserve, that we've seen described all throughout this chapter. Like, do that now. He can save you right now. Secondly, then, if you're here this morning, you're a Christian. If you're trusting in Jesus by faith, but you feel that temptation that's described all throughout this chapter, and you stumble and you fight, and there's this tension in your heart. Like, how do you guard then? How do you guard your heart against materialism? How do you guard your heart against becoming like these rich, wealthy landowners? How do you guard your heart against hoarding and indulging yourself like we've seen in this chapter? Well, here are four quick, and the key word here is quick, like four quick ways to guard your heart. And again, this is huge. Like, our church is located in the wealthiest county in Kansas. Like, there is nice stuff all around us. Just drive down the road, and there's an allurement and calling out to worship this, worship that. You must have this, love this. There are people getting paid millions upon millions upon millions of dollars sitting in offices all day long trying to get you to indulge yourself in the material possessions of this world. All day long, that's what they're trying to do. And so how in the world are you going to guard against it? Well, remember these warnings that we've seen. And then I would encourage you to follow these four practical recommendations. And we're going to make these quick. The first suggestion would be this. It's to not envy. Don't envy the unbelieving rich. Don't envy the unbelieving rich. Like, this is easy to do. It's a struggle in my own heart. It's easy to envy. It's easy to look around at what you don't have. It's easy to look around at what other people have. And to envy, to be jealous. And to think to yourself, man, they're living the good life. Look at all their stuff. Look at the vacations they do. And I don't have anything. Or it's easy to feel like just a loser, a worthless piece of trash, or a failure when you look at just what you have and what everybody else has. Don't envy them. Their stuff's not going to last. All that stuff, it's going to eat up moths, it's going to rot, it's not going to last. But not only that, but there's a day coming in which those unbelieving rich that you envy so much and that you're jealous of so much, that you're comparing yourself with so much, there's coming a day in which they're going to weep and wail because the miseries that are going to come upon them. Why envy that? There's nothing to envy there. Second way to guard ourselves then from hoarding and indulging ourselves like these wealthy landowners is this. It's to live on a limited budget and be as generous as you can. Live on a limited budget and be as generous as you can. What I mean by that is this. Set a cap on your lifestyle. Like decide right now, just set a cap on your lifestyle. This is it. Not going above this. Doesn't matter how much money I ever make. Doesn't matter how much money I ever get. This is it right here. This is the cap. This is what I'm going to live on. And be generous with everything else. So then, for example, like figure out your basic necessities. What you need realistically in the culture and climate in which we live. Look ahead into the future and determine just what you need in the future. Be wise in terms of future savings, future expenses that are coming up. And use that as a cap on your lifestyle of what you need. In other words, we've bought into this lie of an increase in income automatically means an increase in lifestyle. The more money you make, the bigger house you get. The more money you make, the nicer car you get. The more money you make, and just extra TV you get. I mean, just an increase in money equals an increase in lifestyle. That doesn't have to be the case. Set a cap, a limit. This is what I can live on. Look into future expenses and expenditures and savings and things of that nature. Set a cap. Be as generous as you can with the rest. Like one of the greatest antidotes to the love of money is to give it away, is generosity. Third way then to guard ourselves from following in the footsteps of these wealthy landowners is this. It's when buying something, don't just ask, can I afford this? Ask, what is this going to do to my heart? Did you catch that there? This is huge here. When you're thinking and contemplating about buying something, don't look into your bank account and just ask, can I afford it? Look into your heart and ask, what is this going to do to my heart? Will this new whatever feed my ego? Will this new whatever make me proud? Will this new whatever increase just my feelings of my worth and my value as a person? Will it cause me to be less dependent on God? Will it cause me to trust God less? Will it cause me to find my security in this rather than God? Will it cause me to become more attached to this world and more fixated on the things of this world? Will it keep me from being generous and being able to share with others? Here's the point. We have to realize that when you're contemplating buying something is more than a financial decision. Can I afford this? Buying something is a spiritual decision. What is this going to do to my heart? Fourth and final way that to guard ourselves from the love and worship of money is this. It's to remember. that you have a greater treasure than any treasure that this world has to offer if you're a Christian. In other words, do you know why rich billionaires don't shop at Goodwill? Nothing against Goodwill. Or Savers. Shop at Savers. But do you ever wonder why when you go in there to buy your jeans, why rich billionaires aren't in there shopping and buying stuff? It's because the stuff they own, the stuff that they already possess, is a whole lot better and a whole lot superior to anything in Goodwill and thrift store. It's a lot better. So why would they go and buy something that's inferior to what they already have? That they don't need it. They have something a whole lot better. And the same is true when it comes for us as Christians. When it comes to our money, when it comes to our possessions. Like, hear this. You might not feel like this, and you might not realize this, but if you're a Christian, you're rich. Like, you are so filthy, stinking, wealthy, and rich. It's unbelievable. Not rich like Elon Musk or Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos and all those people, but man, you're wealthier than all of them like combined. Like, you might not have hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars like they do. You might not have as many houses as they do. You might not have a huge mansions like they do. You might not have a private jet or jets like they do. You might not own all that they do, but you have something better. You have something far more valuable than they have. You have an eternal kingdom. You have an inheritance that moth and rust can't ever destroy. You have an inheritance that is going to last forever. And the inheritance isn't some dinky little mansion. And the inheritance isn't some small little jet. And the inheritance isn't just, a couple hundred billion dollars. You have the new heavens and the new earth that is going to be brought to you when Jesus returns. Think about that. You get an earth. An earth. A perfectly restored earth. No blot, no blemish here. It's yours. It's your kingdom. Have at it. And if that's true, and it is true, then that frees us. It frees us from materialism. It frees us from indulging ourselves and accumulating more and more stuff here on this earth. Why? We don't have to. We got something a whole lot more valuable and a whole lot better than any of the trinkets and toys and gadgets this world has to offer. So why indulge in it? And why store it up? You're the treasure that is coming for you when Jesus returns is far more superior to anything this world has to offer. And so you're free to live for that treasure in heaven and free from trying to live now, keeping up with the Joneses and living for the treasure of this world. Let's pray. Lord, thank you. Just for your goodness toward us. Even as we began this service reading Ephesians 1, 3 through 14 and the spiritual blessings that have been given to us in Jesus, those things far exceed any purchase, any possession that this world has to offer. And so, God, help us to keep our eyes. It's hard to walk by faith and not by sight, seeing everything around us and just the allurement of it all and attaching ourselves to it, finding our identity in it, looking to those things to be and do for us what only you are meant to be and do for us, and for our worth and our value to be attached to how much we have. And oh, help us not buy into that lie. Help us to live as the richest people on the face of the planet. Not because of our material possessions, but because of the great wealth of spiritual blessings that you've lavished on us now in Jesus, in the here and now, right now, but also in the spiritual blessing that's to come, that will turn into a physical blessing, a physical world, a physical new earth, a physical kingdom that awaits us in the world to come. And help us to live our lives in light of that. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.